Good evening and welcome to the Stop the Abortion Mandate webcast. Tonight we are going to be specifically focusing on the crisis in the United States Senate of abortion in healthcare reform. My name is David B. Wright. I serve as the director of 40 Days for Life, and I'm also honored to be serving tonight as the moderator and host of this discussion. We have a wonderful evening of information packed into this next hour together. You're going to hear from some expert presenters, and you're going to hear information that will educate you, some that might actually inspire you, even in the times of darkness that we live in, and also that will help you to know what you can do to help be a solution in these times in which we are living. To give you a quick bit of background before we dive into our content for this evening of how this webcast specifically came about, since healthcare reform efforts really took center stage in America shortly after the current administration took office, abortion has been right in the middle of this entire discussion. Abortion has been at the center of the legislative proposals in the House and the Senate, and we will have in just a minute as we get started a quick review of what has happened up to this point as this issue has become a central issue in our national media and in our political discussion. But right now, the attention is focused on the United States Senate, and there is a crisis brewing in the Senate right now as the health care reform bill, which is on the verge of being passed into law. Even today, President Obama said we are on the precipice, were his words, of imposing this national government-run health care system on America, a government-run health system that would result in its current form in the largest expansion of abortion since Roe versus Wade was imposed on our land in 1973. More than 70 organizations, pro-life and pro-family organizations, have united together into the Stop the Abortion Mandate Coalition, and this effort represents hundreds of thousands, perhaps even millions, of American families who are joined together to oppose the abortion mandate in healthcare reform. Tonight we have done something a little different than what we've done on past Stop the Abortion Mandate webcasts. We've assembled together in one room a panel of nationally respected pro-life and pro-family leaders, all seated around one conference table at the Americans United for Life office, literally just around the corner from the White House in Washington, D.C. We are gathered together tonight for this event to educate you, to equip you, to give you the facts, and to empower you to make a difference. And our hope is that by the time we are done together tonight, you will know what is at stake at this moment in history, and you will know exactly what needs to be done to make an impact at this crucial moment. So before we hear from our expert presenters, I would like to start with an opening prayer, and I've asked Marjorie Dannenfelser from the Susan B. Anthony List to lead us in an opening prayer. Marjorie?
Thank you, David. I know you know the power of prayer because you've led a beautiful prayer movement, so thank you. Father in heaven, we ask you to bless this family gathered around this table, but most importantly, the extended family on the phone tonight. It's an indication of the closeness of this family that as we have grown in numbers since the threats on human life, that we would come together in this moment. And in this moment, we ask you to bless every single person on this line. You created each one of us for a purpose, just as you've created each child that you brought into the world for a purpose who is needed and loved. You know that purpose. You also know our limits. So where we end, we know that you have to begin. We know that we can do nothing without you. So we ask you to bless our efforts, double them, triple them, quadruple them, and inspire this conversation, lift us all up, help us to put every difference aside and see only you and march towards your truth. And with a good plan, in your name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Marjorie. And I'd like to introduce the panel of experts that we have sitting here in this room together tonight. We have immediately to my left, Douglas Johnson, and Douglas serves as the legislative director for National Right to Life Committee. Douglas, how are you this evening?
Good to be with you.
We're glad to have you here. You just heard from Marjorie Dannenfelser, who is with the Susan B. Anthony List, serves as the president and chairman of the board. Marjorie, how are you doing this evening?
Great to be here with these fun people.
And we have Kristen Hawkins, and Kristen serves as the executive director of Students for Life of America. Kristen, how are you tonight?
Good. Glad to be here.
All right. We also have sitting at the table here Tony Perkins, and Tony serves as the president of the Family Research Council. Tony, how are you?
Good evening, David. Thanks for having me here.
We're glad you're here. Also, Charmaine Yost, President and CEO of Americans United for Life, is at the end of the table here. Charmaine, how are you doing this evening?
It's great to have you all here, David. I think we should do this more often.
It is kind of neat to all be gathered in one room rather than just by the phone lines. And then last to my right is Wendy Wright, who is the President of Concerned Women for America. Wendy, how are you doing?
I'm very hopeful.
Good. And that's good news to hear at this moment in time. Well, these are the people you'll be hearing from tonight, and we will have everybody answering questions as we go, and there will be a little bit of interplay as well as we have a roundtable discussion about the issues that are facing us. But to help us get up to speed, let's start off with Doug Johnson from National Right to Life Committee. And Doug, can you get us started by going back just a little bit and giving everyone a quick bit of background about abortion in healthcare reform, what we're seeing played out on the national scene, how this all transpired, and then can you get us all up to speed with the latest developments in the United States Senate and how what's happening, even at this very moment, affects our arguments and our strategies as we move forward?
Yes, thank you, David. You know, the history of this really goes back to the Clinton administration when President Clinton tried in 1993 and 94 to pass a federal healthcare restructuring bill. And that bill, like this one, would have carried with it sweeping abortion mandates and subsidies for abortion. That bill went down to defeat in no small part because of the efforts of grassroots pro-life activists all across this country. And ever since then, the pro-abortion forces have been waiting for another chance. They pressed candidates on this during the 2008 presidential campaign. And many of you may have seen on our organizational websites the video of Barack Obama promising the Planned Parenthood Action Fund that abortion would be at the center, at the heart, he said, of his health care reform legislation. And when he was elected with 6-4 majorities in both houses of Congress of his party, the pro-abortion forces started putting together their wish list, and this was on the top of it. As recently as April of this year, the president of the Planned Parenthood Federation of America said on National Public Radio that they intended to use this health care legislation as a platform, as she put it, to extend abortion access to all women. That was their agenda. That is what was it woven into the fabric of the bills that were introduced in the House and Senate this past spring. And if you had been depending only on the mainstream news media for your information, you would have never known this. But because the organizations around this table, the National Right to Life affiliates around the country, and the other components of the pro-life movement were alert to this danger, millions of Americans became active on this issue, and Congress had to respond. And that led, with a lot of work, to a vote on November 7th on the floor of the House of Representatives. This is a vote that the pro-abortion House Democratic leadership had desperately tried to avoid, but a small group of dedicated pro-life Democrat House members refused to budge and would not support the legislation moving forward unless they were given a vote on an amendment to remove from the bill two major new federal programs that would subsidize abortion, that's to say to remove abortion from those programs. Congressman Bart Stupak of Michigan being the core of that group. And once they got that vote, our side prevailed on November 7th by a vote of 240 to 194. This stunned the mainstream news media and the leadership of the Congress and the White House. This is something they had not bargained on, and it was the result of the efforts of people all around this country communicating directly with their elected representatives and with their fellow citizens. And that's what we need now. And these next 10 days or so are really critical. Because after that vote, the empire struck back. The pro-abortion movement was stunned by this defeat on the floor of the House. They were not prepared for this. But they have mobilized their considerable resources of all kinds, including their resources in the news media and the opinion elites and the White House. And the president has come out against the amendment that the House passed. And the Senate Democratic leader, Harry Reid, wrote a bill that did not contain the pro-life language, but rather, once again, would set up two big new federal programs that would subsidize abortion. And we have tried, everybody here, to fix that, and our amendment, the Nelson-Hatch Amendment, was defeated on the floor of the House that, on the 8th of December by a vote of 54-45. At this point, this can't be fixed. That's to say, it is very clear that the President and the top Democratic leadership that control the House and Senate will not allow it to be fixed, will not allow a bill that does not contain these abortion subsidies to go to the President. So the only thing to do at this point is to defeat this legislation, and it is on the knife's edge. It requires 60 votes to get this bill out of the Senate. As of this evening, the Democratic leader in the Senate believes he has 59. We hope that through all of our efforts, we can deny him that 60th vote. But if worse comes to worse and the bill does emerge from the Senate, it has to go to the House one more time, where there still is that band of pro-life lawmakers who we need to do everything we can to encourage to stand their ground.
All right, so Doug, we certainly know the battle is at a critical moment right now, and there's a lot that needs to be done. Let me turn now to Dr. Charmaine Yost. And Charmaine, Planned Parenthood is right at the center of pushing for this abortion mandate. They're pushing for government funding of abortion, and the rest of the abortion industry is aggressively pressuring the Senate trying to ram this through. Why is Planned Parenthood, why is the abortion industry so adamant about this? What's in it for them?
Well, David, I'm always grateful for the opportunity to talk about Planned Parenthood and particularly to talk about their financial interest in this bill. Let me start, if you don't mind, by thanking everybody who's joined us tonight on the phone. When you talked about the beginning of this meeting tonight, I just am sitting here remembering how we were concerned about the possibility of having a call the week before Christmas. And when Kristen sent around an email today saying that thousands and thousands and thousands of people had signed up to join us tonight, I just couldn't believe it, because, you know, this is a really important time for people who share our values and who believe in life. And so to all of you who have joined us, I just thank you so much. I've even just come from my middle daughter's Christmas band concert. I mean, I know that's what we're all really caring about right now, but we can't afford to not take the time to focus on health care. And it really hit me because I was explaining to my daughter why I was slipping away right after her concert to come here tonight to work on the call. And I told her that it was because we were working to stop at the greatest expansion of abortion since Roe v. Wade and government-funded abortion in the health care bill. And her response to me was, "I just don't get it, Mom. I just don't get it," she said. "Why is it so hard to understand that abortion is killing?" And that really struck me driving over here, because, of course, everybody on the line with us tonight understands the answer to that simple truth. We all understand why that is. But the thing of it is, there are two factors that I want to talk about that do make this whole topic of abortion health care confusing, and I think it's really important for us to keep it in mind. The first one is Planned Parenthood themselves. They are throwing every resource that they have into this fight. Some of that is ideological. From their founding, their fundamental mission has always been to define abortion as health care. So this is the fight that they have been waiting a century for. This is what it has always been about for them. So we are really, really coming to a high water mark for them, and they understand that. But let's not forget that it is more than ideological. It goes to the most crass motive out there, and it is financial. Even a lot of people, excuse me, on our side of the issue, a lot of pro-life people don't know that Planned Parenthood is a $1 billion industry. It's a $1 billion industry, and $350 million of our tax dollars just last year went to underwrite this industry. So for them, with this bill, it's a financial interest. We feel so strongly about this issue that we took out a full-page ad in the Hill newspaper last week challenging Cecile Richards of Planned Parenthood to come clean with the American people about her financial interests. And we started the letter by saying we would go first in revealing our financial interests. And the bottom line is America's United for Life does not get a single dollar from this bill. I look around this table at the assembled leaders of the pro-life organizations of this country. Susan B. Anthony List, Students for Life, Family Research Council, National Right to Life, 40 Days for Life, Concerned Women for America. Not a single one of these groups gets a single dollar from this bill, and yet Planned Parenthood stands to gain millions from this bill, and we cannot forget that that's an important part of this. The second issue that we've got to be aware of in terms of the confusion, and this is particularly important for those of you in the grassroots, is that the senators who are working to pass this bill, who are all allied with the abortion lobby, they are actively working to use parliamentary maneuvering behind closed doors negotiations and hardball tactics to ensure that it's confusing. They want to find the most manipulative way possible to ram this legislation through right here during Christmas time, and they are counting on the pro-life grassroots to be distracted by one of the most sacred seasons of the year. So again, that's why I'm so gratified that so many of you would take the time out to pay attention to what's going on. So let me just conclude with three brief points that I want to leave with you that we have to focus on in terms of countering the disinformation campaign. The first is please, please stay informed. Tonight is a good start. I know you all have been with us over the last few months. Please help us spread the news. We need you to be using your social media accounts to leverage against the power of the mainstream media. Knowledge is power, and one of the biggest threats that we have right now is the possibility that phony abortion language will be attached to this bill at some point in the next couple weeks. If that happens, we're really going to have your help to spread the word to counter the disinformation campaign that Planned Parenthood will almost certainly put up, saying that the bill has, quote-unquote, been fixed. And that simply is just not going to happen. The bill is not going to be fixed at this point, and as Doug has already said, we have to kill this legislation. Secondly, we have to have a quick and targeted response. We've all been seeing a lot of talk online about the relative wisdom of different kinds of strategies. I hope you'll all keep in mind that we can't always lay out in public forums exactly the details of exactly what a strategy is going to be. No political or military campaign is ever going to do that. The situation keeps changing literally by the minute. All of us are very closely connected to what's going on up on the Hill and working with our allies on the Hill. We need to have the ability to contact you all and quickly target specific actions, and I just ask that you would keep that in mind and be ready to deploy all of your online resources through your email, through your Facebook, through your Twitter, through phone calling, through emailing. All of those things are going to be so critical to the life movement making a difference in this debate. And then very lastly, I'll conclude with positive reinforcement. I really can't underscore enough that not everyone on Capitol Hill is an opponent. We hear so much about the people who are promoting an abortion agenda, but I want to underscore that we work with some amazing heroes on Capitol Hill who have been working around the clock over the last couple months at the staff level, at the representative level, at the senator level. These people, they are so committed to our issue, and without them in positions of power, we wouldn't have any chance of defeating this bill. And sometimes we don't do as good a job as we're pressing forward and saying, no, 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 don't do this, don't do that. We forget to turn around and say, thank you so much for standing up for life. And right now we've got some really heroic people on Capitol Hill who need to hear from you that they are not standing alone. We've got staffers up on the Hill who are having to cancel their airplane flights to go home for Christmas. These are some heroic people. Please take a moment, if you would, and send an email of encouragement to your pro-life representative, your pro-life senator, and to their staff to thank them for standing up for life.
Well, thank you, Charmaine, and you've given us some clear things that we can do, as well as helping us to understand what different organizations have at stake. And as you mentioned, none of us around the table have anything to gain from this health care reform bill. And I so appreciated the ad that you ran in the Hill. I thought that was a very, very clear way of articulating that point, that Planned Parenthood stands to gain literally multi-millions, perhaps hundreds of millions of dollars, should this piece of legislation pass. Let's shift the conversation to the person right next to Charmaine, and that is to Tony Perkins from the Family Research Council. Tony, we've gotten over 1,000 questions pouring in tonight into this webcast. We certainly aren't going to stay on and answer every single one, but we tried to group them into different themes that we're working into the different presenters' points. One of the questions that we saw over and over and over again was people asking, why aren't our elected officials listening to us? And when we look at what the polls are telling us right now about how Americans feel about the government using our money to pay for abortions, what are they revealing to us? Why aren't the elected officials listening to us? And from your perspective, being so intimately involved in what is happening here in Washington, how central is abortion to this entire health care reform piece of legislation currently in the United States Senate?
Well, those are some very good questions. And, of course, if we've got the rest of the night, I can answer all of them. But let me first say, David, thanks for organizing this call, and I want to thank Charmaine for hosting us here at their offices tonight. I do think it's good to be able to be in the same room and talk. You know, it's interesting, as having been in elected office, the reason that the president is pushing so intently to get this bill passed, first we had, you know, it was supposed to have been done by August. We wanted it done before Labor Day. Then we saw it pushed to October, then Thanksgiving. Now here we are just a week away from Christmas, and we're saying it's got to be done before Christmas. Now there's talk into the new year. The reason the intent push is here is because the president knows that these members of Congress are going to have to stand for re-election. And there's one thing that helps elected officials, and I'm going to use the term politician. Not every elected official is a politician. But what helps the politicians hear the voice of the people is re-election. And so they know that the closer this gets to next fall and into the election cycle, the less likely they are to be in supporting a bill like this because it is so radical of public policy. And Charmaine is right. This is not about the American people and their physical well-being. This is about abortion and Planned Parenthood. This is a Planned Parenthood bailout. I mean, we've bailed out the automobile industry. You know, we've got bailed out Wall Street. This is a bailout for Planned Parenthood, who's actually having to close many of their clinics across America. Now, it's interesting when you talk about the polls. Where do the American people stand on this? We saw a CNN poll, and we know that they're not a conservative entity that's putting out conservative propaganda. But they showed that 6 out of 10 Americans are opposed to taxpayer funding of abortion. I think it's important, David, that our listeners understand when they're talking to their friends who may not be with them on the issue of life, this is a different issue. This is not the same as, do you support legalized abortion? I mean, we're winning that battle, too. We're actually now at a point where a majority of Americans think abortion should not be legal in this country in all circumstances as it presently is. But when it comes to, do you want to pay for it, the answer is much different, where we see 7 out of 10 in some polls say, no, I don't want to pay for this. And what's really fascinating, Douglas mentioned this about the debate back in the 90s when the Clintons pushed health care reform. In the polling back then, when people were asked if abortion should be included in government benefits, back in August of 1994, only 49% said it should not be. They didn't think it should be included in there. In November of 2009, just this past month, the number was 55%. What's fascinating to me, in fact, the other number is even more encouraging, really, is that in 1994, 42% felt that it should be included. 28% this time feels it should be included. What that tells me is that we have made tremendous gains in this country as it pertains to the protection and the sanctity of human life. That's what's so critical about this, because we have seen, because of the National Right to Life and Susan B. Anthony and Concerned Women for America and all the organizations represented here and others that have been on this issue for 35 years, America has changed. America now has a greater respect for human life. And this is the last breath and struggle of the pro-abortion community to wrestle this issue away from the American people. Think about this for a moment. What happens, as I think most in this room would agree,
that we're so close to seeing abortion outlawed in this country,
or predominantly becoming a pro-life nation again.
I mean, we're that close. But if we see every health insurance program or policy in America include government funding of abortion, that puts it out of reach and into a whole new realm of public policy debate. It actually probably takes it off the table in terms of being a public policy debate. This is their last stand to change America in their image and advance a culture of death. For me, as I've seen the debate and watched the other side as if this were, you know, some kind of standoff in many cases, just watching their reactions to some of these amendments and how they've responded, this bill is more about abortion than it is health care.
Mm-hmm.
They literally, I believe when it comes down to it, will sacrifice
improving health care in America
if they cannot expand abortion. That is the bottom line.
And as I'm looking around the table, I'm seeing every other head nod because we all have seen that and we all recognize that, and I appreciate you articulating that so well. Wendy Wright from Concerned Women for America, how exactly does this proposed government-run health care system equal mandated government funding of abortion, and why should everybody listening, tens of thousands of people listening right now to this webcast, why should they be deeply concerned about this?
Well, let me first say that I believe that it is when things seem bleakest that we then see God work most clearly.
Hmm.
So that is why I am hopeful. This is how it will work. We all are familiar now that the pro-life amendment failed in the Senate, and so now the bill sets up a system in which it will hand off power, control to a government bureaucracy. The bill sets up powers given to the Secretary of Health and Human Services that even NPR describes as czar-like. It's a huge amount of power that will be in the hands of Kathleen Sebelius. Who's Kathleen Sebelius? Well, before she was Secretary of Health and Human Services, she was the governor of Kansas. And in that position, she was undoubtedly the most pro-abortion governor in the United States. She had a long history as a legislator and as governor of not only promoting pro-abortion bills, but voting against every single pro-life measure, common sense measures like even parental notification. And as governor, she hindered investigations into abortionists who were accused of committing illegal actions, including illegal late-term abortions and abortions on young girls without knowledge of their parents. So that's the person who will be in charge of this healthcare system that this bill sets up. Not only her, but it also creates a commission that will ultimately decide what treatment you as a patient can and cannot have. The way that works is because they'll be deciding what will be covered, what will be paid for. So let's put this in practical terms. Let's say there's a woman who's pregnant, and it's a government bureaucrat deciding what treatment she can and cannot have. Now, we're all familiar that prenatal care, delivery, postnatal care can cost several thousand dollars. If the baby has special needs or the mother has special needs, that jacks up the costs even more. So you've got a government bureaucrat who's going to be pressured to be reducing costs, and he's looking at either $400 for an abortion or several thousand dollars for real health care, true health care. It's not unlikely that we will see the government approving abortion for a patient, but not approving true health care for women and their children. So there's a real threat of rationed care leading to, in essence, coerced abortions. Now, I think we all need to be aware that this not only threatens the lives of unborn children, but it also threatens the disabled, the elderly. Those who will have expensive health care will be put at risk, the vulnerable. We recognize, I think we all know, and those of us in the pro-life movement recognize, that if you accept this idea that one class of human beings can be treated as subhuman or less than human and can be eliminated because they belong to that class of human beings, that class will spread to other classes, to others who the powerful will determine don't have a right to live.
that they are subhuman. And when we look at the costs that are involved in this health care bill, just seeing the numbers come out now from the government agencies that score these things, and, for example, they're saying that this health care bill will cause 1 in 5 health care providers to become unprofitable. In other words, they're going to go out of business. That means there'll be fewer health care providers. Well, fewer health providers mean there's less access for patients. And again, let's bring it back to the pregnant woman who has special needs. I think many of us are familiar with, we have friends or family who've had difficult pregnancies, and it can be hard for them to find a doctor who's willing to provide them the care that they need. If there are even fewer doctors, that will just exacerbate the problem. So we can see how very bleak this situation is, but we can also remember that God does intervene even in those bleak times. And as we're thinking about what we're about to celebrate in a week, Christmas, the birth of our Savior, and there is a part of that story that was very dark, and that was when Herod, the governor of the land, ordered the slaughter of innocent children. And I can't even imagine the grief there must have been throughout the land in the loss of all those children. And yet, God's will survived through that. So we can take hope in that God's will survive, and we should certainly be asking that God would use us as his instruments to affect his will through this trial and tribulation we are facing now.
And Wendy, thank you for pointing us to hope, because I think sometimes it is easy to look at the problem, but then to shift our focus and instead realize that we can be a solution to that problem. And if we get many people doing the things that seem so insignificant, just one person can make a tremendous difference when those voices are all added together in a way that is so powerful it really can get attention at the highest levels. Let's shift the discussion now to Marjorie Dannenfelser over here from Susan B. Anthony List. And Marjorie, Senator Nelson introduced an amendment in the Senate, and this amendment mirrored the language of the STUPAC amendment that was introduced in the House of Representatives. And Senator Nelson and his colleagues' amendment would have maintained the status quo that we've seen from the Hyde Amendment by blocking government funding, restricting government funding of abortions in health care. That amendment, as we've heard previously from the discussions here, was killed. What are the ramifications of that action? And even more importantly, this may build upon themes that some of the other presenters have shared. What does this mean now about the current status of the Senate health care reform bill?
Well, thank you, David. And Wendy, I just love what you said. And that immense grief that you described 2,000 years ago is a grief that we want to avoid for the mothers that and the unborn children that are in the future here. Certainly, their grief should not come at our hands. One of my favorite quotes from Susan B. Anthony was about abortion. She said, abortion will burden a woman's conscience and life. It'll burden her soul in the grave. But thrice guilty is the one who drove her to the dreadful deed. And when you and I and everyone listening here are compelled to fund almost every abortion that occurs in this country, we ourselves are being forced to drive women to this dreadful deed that will grieve them in this life and the next. But the good news and the hope, as you described, is in the opportunity now, shifting to politics, is the opportunity now that senators and members of the House have to take a principled stand, especially those members who call themselves pro-life, who won the Susan B. Anthony's primary role in the political arena is, number one, to motivate grassroots activists to let their voices be heard. But then when it comes election time, let's make sure that those who've called themselves pro-life live up to that label. A quarter of Democrats in the House of Representatives voted for the very brave leadership, behind the very brave leadership of Bart Stupak, voted for the pro-life amendment to keep abortion funding out. A quarter of the Democrats, that is not even close to the number of Democrats that are pro-life in this country. So The Democrats that indeed do call themselves pro-life, let's say certainly Senator Nelson, and we have a very strong focus right now on the leadership of Senator Casey, do not call yourself pro-life if you plan to vote for this bill. It simply can't be done. Let's look to the leadership of Governor Casey, the father of Senator Casey, who understood what it was to defend the little guy, the working class, those who are in the shadows of society, who fall through the cracks potentially. You cannot build a legitimate health care system on the backs of unborn children and their deaths. You simply cannot be pro-life and vote for this bill. And really, we are looking to the pro-life Democrats in the House and the Senate to vote consistent with their principled stand that they have already taken and that they've already expressed. Senator Reid, who described himself, continues to describe himself as pro-life, simply can't anymore. When you say that you're pro-life, what does that mean? I mean, when you think that even one abortion takes the life of an unborn child, you simply can't say that you're for health care that destroys those human lives. So I would say that this grassroots movement needs to communicate very, very clearly to those handful of pro-life Democrats in the Senate and the 64 Democrats that are pro-life and that voted for this two-pack amendment in the House, that was great that you did that. Thank you for taking that stand. But what matters now, the most important pro-life vote you will ever take and the most consequential vote for the pro-life movement that you will ever take is coming up now, and it will be to vote against this the bill that will most surely include funding for abortion. We now have been running ads in Nevada, and we are beginning to run ads in Pennsylvania communicating this very thing. There are times in history when you have to go against the current. And these pro-life Democrats who have been heroes, many of them up until this point, can't falter now. They can't falter now. They've stood strong against their leadership. They have stood strong against their president on this issue. This president will do anything, and this Democratic leadership will do anything to keep abortion in the bill. They are buying off senators left and right. They'll do anything to keep it in the bill, even pass off on the public option. They're buying off Senator Nelson as we speak. They're threatening to remove military bases from his state if he votes the wrong way on this. I'm just saying, let's back these guys up. Let's make sure that they know that they will be held accountable in the next election for their pro-abortion vote if they vote that way, and pray that they have courage and back them up when they do the right thing.
Go ahead, Doug.
Marjorie, let me elaborate on that, because as you mentioned, when the Nelson-Hatch Amendment came to a vote in the Senate on December 8th, there were 7 Democrats who voted for the amendment, but it failed. It was defeated. And at this point, the only pro-life vote is no. No on moving that bill out of the Senate. And regrettably, this evening as we speak, the Democratic leader, Senator Reid, believes he has 59 of the 60 that he needs. And the one who he has not been able to get on board yet is Senator Ben Nelson. And certainly they are trying to offer him all sorts of inducements, but so far he has not budged. Indeed, he was called in to meet with the president today. So any listeners in Nebraska should certainly encourage him to stand his ground, because you can imagine what this is like when you stand alone and all of your colleagues want you to get on board the bandwagon, the president wants you to get on board, the institutional media, news media starts pounding on you. It is important to encourage somebody in that situation to stand his ground and not vote yes on this fatally corrupted bill. But if somehow they should pick up another vote, a Republican should defect and make up for Senator Nelson's stand, and this gets out of the Senate, then there still is that band in the House led by Bart Stupak. And as Marjorie said, everybody should know how they voted the first time. Everybody should encourage them to stand their ground. This bill cannot pass if they withdraw their support.
And we'll be talking in just a few minutes about how people can contact their elected officials, and we've made that very easy. Kristen Hawkins will be addressing that in a few minutes. We've talked about Senator Nelson from Nebraska and his colleague from the state of Nebraska, Senator Mike Johanns, recorded a segment for us to play for you here this evening, and I think you'll be very encouraged by the words that he has. Let's listen to Senator Mike Johanns from the state of Nebraska.
Hello, everyone. This is Senator Mike Johanns from the state of Nebraska. I'm pleased to have this opportunity to visit with you. I'm sorry that it could not be in person, but as you can imagine, we are extremely busy these days with the health care reform issue. Tonight, though, I want to focus on just one aspect of that, and that is the issue relating to public funding of abortions. As you all know, for a long, long time, 30 years, the Hyde Amendment has governed the issue of public funding of abortions. The Hyde Amendment came about in 1977. At that time, it applied to Medicaid. But over time, it has been applied to a number of programs, the CHIP program, the Medicare program, the Indian Health Services program, the Veterans and Military Health Care programs. It's even been applied to the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program, and this program is a perfect example. This is a program where we provide health insurance to federal employees. It's a mix of the employees' money and federal tax dollars. And we've just said very clearly, based upon the Hyde Amendment, no, we're not going to allow benefits to be offered that would provide for abortion services. So you can see the clear historical distinction that was made. Well, along came health care reform, and there were enterprising people who really wanted to see public funding of abortion who got in the middle of this. And Speaker Pelosi really wanted to get this done so federal funds could be used to provide abortion services. On the House side some weeks ago, the Ellsworth Amendment tried to split the difference. But this is a difference that cannot be split. And ultimately, Congressman Stupak and others stood strong. And they said, with a group of courageous Democrats and unity on the Republican side, that this is a line in the sand. They said, we will not support a health care bill unless it follows Hyde. And so the Stupak Amendment was passed. Almost immediately, the leadership on the House side said, well, we won't vote for that again. We're against that language. And on, it clearly indicated that they were not sincere about this language staying in the health care bill. So then the bill came to the Senate. I gave a speech on the floor at the time of the vote on the motion to proceed, and I just said very clearly, this is a pro-life vote. The reason for that argument was once the bill goes to the floor, you have a situation where it needs 60 votes to amend that bill. Well, I knew we weren't going to get 60 votes. No one could prove to me that we had 60 pro-life senators, and so I was very confident that the Reid language, which allowed public funding of abortion, would stay in that bill. A few days ago, Senator Nelson and others tried to get an amendment passed that would put the Stupak language in the Senate bill. As I suspected, when all the votes were tallied up, that amendment failed. And so now we have in this Senate bill literally a mechanism for the creation of a system that will provide for abortions plus public funding for abortions. It was a very, very disappointing vote, but I have to say it was not an unexpected vote. But my message tonight is to say to you, all is not lost. There are cloture votes ahead of us. All we are looking for is 41 pro-life senators who are willing to say no on ending debate until the Nelson-Stupak language is included in the Reid substitute amendment. Here is the very, very important point, my friends. There are some out there, even in the pro-life community, who are going to, I fear, take a pass on this cloture vote, just like they did on the motion to proceed. In other words, they're going to make the case, well, we don't really get involved in these procedural votes. What could happen then is a pro-life senator could play games here. A pro-life senator could just very simply vote for cloture, be a part of the 60 to end the debate, and then turn around and vote no against the bill, knowing when they vote for cloture that there's enough votes to pass the bill. My friends, I believe so strongly that if we are pro-life, we are pro-life at every step in the process, every step. Not just the steps that are most convenient to our viewpoint. There are pro-life groups that want this health care bill passed. Fine. But don't give up your convictions. Don't give up your pro-life convictions by allowing senators to, in effect, vote for cloture and then vote against the bill. In my judgment, that would be complicit in providing a mechanism in federal funding to allow abortions to occur. And that would be a very, very sad day for our nation and for the lives of all of those children who are unborn. Please stand with us. Make the case firmly and strongly that it is not only the vote on the final passage of the bill, it is also the vote on bringing about cloture that are the pro-life votes here. Stand up for what you believe in and back up the pro-life senators who are looking to you for leadership and direction. I know I have talked longer than I anticipated and maybe longer than you would prefer, but this is important. Once we provide a mechanism and funding for federal funds for abortion, this will change everything, and the chances of ever getting out of federal legislation are really slim to none. So it is time now to act. In this season where we celebrate the birth of Christ, I believe it's time to stand strong at every step for life. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Senator Johans, and those words are very stirring. It's time now to act, to stand strong. And we will hear from, in just a minute, Abby Johnson, a recording of a discussion I had with her earlier today for this webcast. Abby is the former Planned Parenthood director from Texas, and she has some very stirring words about what Planned Parenthood has to gain to build off of what Charmaine shared with us earlier. But with what Senator Johans has just said, I think this would be a good time for us to go around to these experts who are gathered at this table. And it is really, I have to say, very humbling for me to be gathered with all of these people who are such experts on policy and on the legislative situation and national leaders of organizations that have earned enormous respect and are influencing the national debate here. I'd like to go around and have each of you just share in maybe one or two sentences your thoughts. Somebody who's listening right now to this webcast, let's say you're sitting across the table, you're having a cup of coffee with them, and you are sharing with them from your viewpoint, from your experience and everything that you know of what's going on, the single most important thing that they can do right now to make a difference with this crisis in the Senate, with the crisis of abortion funding and health care reform, what would you tell them? Who wants to go first? Marjorie's going first, and then we'll start with Marjorie. We'll go around the table in a circle.
In politics, the difference between polls and winning a policy is intensity. What members of Congress need to know now is that there is intensity behind this issue. The only way they will know is if you let them know by calling them or emailing them through any one of our group systems. This is the tidal wave that must be created for them to hear your voice. If you haven't done it yet, do it. And if you've not asked three friends to do it, ask them tonight.
Kristen Hawkins.
I have to agree with Marjorie. We've been hearing from people with the Stop the Abortion Mandate emails of, okay, yes, Kristen, I've contacted my senator 2 months ago. What else do I have to do? And I say, do it again. We need to be doing it every single day. and I want to emphasize this later on when we go through our action steps tonight, but calling, writing personal letters and faxes, as well as emails. It only takes a second to do an email. Call them, tie up their phone lines, call their district offices, go visit them in their district offices, but do it every single day and let them know you are watching them and you are paying attention to their votes.
Okay. Tony Perkins.
Ditto. I mean, that's what you need to do. We need to be making those calls. But this is what I would say is most important, is realize this is not inevitable, that they're not going to pass this health card. This is not inevitable that they succeed at this.
I think too often we see the we read the headlines, we look at the news, and we think, oh, we're on the losing side. Look, the majority of Americans are with us. We can win. That's what I think we have to keep reminding ourselves.
Amen. Charmaine.
Use this political moment to teach your children the power of one. I'm so struck when I hear Doug Johnson say they've got 59 senators and they have to have 60. It's one person. It's coming down to one person. Hold that in your mind and then think about the fact that you can go out and get one person that you know. All you need to do is get one person in addition to yourself to be motivated. And if each person on this call does that, we have doubled the number of people who were on this call tonight. Doubled. I mean, it's just, it's simple math. And that's so exciting to me to think that all, you know, it doesn't take a whole lot. It's Christmas time. You've got shopping to do and church to go to. When you go to church, just find your best friend and say, hey, you got to get energized about health care. And I could go on and on, but just focus on the power of one.
Mm-hmm. Okay, when do you write?
Well, if I have to reduce it down to one, I'll combine them all into one action. Pray as you write a letter to the editor of your newspaper and contact talk radio about your visit and call to your senator. Visit their district office and tell others about it.
Go, Wendy.
Wow, I think that was the most I've ever heard taken in one single action.
That was run on.
Would be appalled.
That's right. Hopefully your English teacher is willing but willing to let that one slide this time around. And Kristen, in just a minute, will be also going through the actual webcast page there where you can click the action link, contact Congress now, and you can begin to act on these suggestions. Doug Johnson, your suggestion, the single most important thing.
People should not be fooled by what they're seeing in the institutional news media. Now, in the days ahead, there'll be stories about new abortion language, wonderful compromise, and so forth. Don't be fooled. Unless you see the people like from our organizations on TV saying, we won, don't be fooled. This is another ploy. They will put in more phony language. They will not fix it. The only pro-life vote at this point is no, and you need to be going to the websites of the organizations here. You need to know who's representing you, and you need to know how they're voting on this stuff, and you won't get that information from your local newspaper most likely. You need to get it from the National Rights to Life website or the other groups represented here that are providing up-to-date, accurate information about what's really going on this matter.
Okay. Well, there's one common denominator amongst all of the presenters who are gathered here at this table, and that is that all of us have been pro-life for quite some time. But I think it's important for us to realize that there are people who are on the inside of the abortion industry who have seen and experienced things that can be very instructive to us. And I'd like to share with you now Abby Johnson. Many of you have seen in the news over the last few months. Abby experienced a profound conversion and left the abortion business. She was the director of a Planned Parenthood Abortion Center in Bryan College Station, Texas. I'm very familiar because that's where 40 Days for Life first began. And Abby wanted to share a little bit after this conversion experience about, from her perspective, being a 2008 Planned Parenthood Employee of the Year, what she sees as Planned Parenthood's vested interest. This is a conversation I had with Abby just a little earlier today.
Abby, I think a great place for us to get started would be for you to share just briefly with everybody listening to this webcast this evening your former role at Planned Parenthood. What were you doing and how long were you doing it there at Planned Parenthood?
Well, I actually was involved with Planned Parenthood for 8 years. I was a volunteer for 3 years and then worked there as a paid employee for five. The last little over 2 years that I was there, I was actually the health center director, and I oversaw both programs that we had running at the facility, and those were the abortion programs and then also the family planning.
okay.
Which is everything but abortion.
So you were directing the health center for Planned Parenthood in Bryan College Station, Texas, and all of a sudden, here you are on the Stop the Abortion Mandate webcast. What happened? How did you leave that employment, and how did you come to where you are today?
Well, there were several things that happened. I saw the business model of Planned Parenthood changing drastically from what I believed it should be. But the ultimate thing that changed my mind was seeing an ultrasound-guided abortion procedure, something I'd never seen before, and seeing that 13-week-old baby fighting for its life in the mother's womb.
Mm-hmm. So, Abby, you got to see the inside of this organization for 8 years at varying different levels, and if I recall correctly, in 2008, you were named by your Planned Parenthood affiliate as an Employee of the Year. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay, so you saw the inside scoop, and you saw how Planned Parenthood works and the major player, the abortion giant of the abortion industry. And tonight we're talking a lot about government funding of abortion and of the abortion industry. And from your experience, how much tax money, how many tax dollars is Planned Parenthood already taking in a year across the United States of America?
Well, they're taking in almost $400 million a year in taxpayer money. And, you know, the way that Planned Parenthood works is there's two corporations. There's one that is their family planning corporation, Everything But Abortion, and then there's abortion, there's the abortion corporation. The family planning is taxpayer money. The abortion is not. The abortion company is a for-profit business. But at the end of the day, all of that money goes into the same pot. It goes into the same bank account. So a lot of people are able to, they think in their mind, they're able to separate that. Well, you know, my money, my tax money is going to family planning, it's going to birth control, it's going to annual exams, so it's not going to abortion. But I can assure you that at the end of the day, all of that money goes into the same pot.
And Planned Parenthood throughout this entire health care reform process this year has been fighting aggressively for increasing that tax funding and also to receive tax funding in areas where previously they weren't able to get it. And you mentioned the separate corporations and that for the most part, most abortions were not able to be reimbursed by government funding. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so now Planned Parenthood sees an opportunity to try to get the government to fund abortion procedures. And you've seen experiences of maybe not government funding of abortion, but you've seen where other funds have been made available to those who are seeking abortions that reduces or removes that barrier of cost. And from your experience, when that barrier of cost for an abortion is removed or reduced, what happens to the numbers of abortions?
Well, at my facility in 2008, we received an anonymous donation. All states that were non-Medicaid funded abortion states received a grant that was in the total of about $23 million. And it was given to women who were considered low income, and to help them get an abortion, and it was to remove that financial barrier. And what we saw that year at my facility, and this was nationwide, but particularly at my facility, we saw a 100% increase in the client numbers from 2008 to 2009 that year, whenever we removed that financial barrier.
So when the barrier of cost is reduced or removed, abortion numbers go up.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that was a nationwide trend. The Guttmacher Institute was actually following those numbers, and they could not believe the increase in abortion numbers that they were seeing once these justice funds, that's what they were called, once those were dispersed to the health centers, they could not believe the increase in abortion numbers that we were all seeing. Mm-hmm. They thought it was a mistake. They thought that we were miscalculating our numbers because they were so high.
So from $23 million of funds provided by an anonymous donor that helped to reduce the quote-unquote barrier to abortion of cost. We saw an increase in abortions across the board, and now we're looking at, in the Senate version of the health care reform bill, a massive bailout of the abortion industry and government funding of abortions. Does that, to you, explain why Planned Parenthood and the rest of the abortion industry are trying so hard to ram through the current health care reform proposals? I mean, what's in it for them?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that Planned Parenthood is going to have to work on, they're going to have to work on reimbursement rates. The reimbursement rate for an abortion is lower than what they would get from a woman who was just paying cash for an abortion. But the fact that they are so staunchly behind getting abortion in the health care bill tells me that their numbers show that they are confident enough that their numbers would increase so substantially that they're willing to take that financial loss just because the volume would be so great.
And you shared in numerous media interviews that I've seen with you that when you got into the work at Planned Parenthood, you did it with a desire to help people, but you saw the business model shifting and you saw a different motivation for Planned Parenthood. What was that motivation, and does that play in as well in your perspective of what's currently playing out in the healthcare reform debate?
Sure. What I saw changing in the business model of Planned Parenthood was, one thing that Planned Parenthood always preaches about is how they are a prevention-based healthcare system and healthcare model. But what I actually saw was that when their numbers in family planning were decreasing and they were actually at some point in the negative, they were in the red, they were really looking to their abortion corporation to help pull them up out of that negative number, and they were doing that. So, you know, if one corporation was $600,000 in the hole, the abortion corporation was almost at $1 million over budget. And like I said, at the end of the day, it all goes into the same account. So, you know, you end up at the end of the year with a surplus over your budget.
Well, Abby, I appreciate you sharing all this from your experience inside the largest abortion provider in the United States of America. And, you know, when you look at this in summary and you look at the current health care reform struggle that we're going through, and you realize that this could lead to a massive government funding of abortions, it could lead to a bailout of the abortion industry that is struggling. We saw the Harvard report here just a few weeks ago that indicated that Planned Parenthood is financially struggling across the country. When you look at all of that and you realize the implications of how this could radically increase the number of abortions, it could lead to the largest expansion of abortion since Roe versus Wade, and you personally have had an experience to understand what an abortion is through that ultrasound-aided abortion that you witnessed that led to your conversion to leave the abortion industry. If you could summarize, if you were sitting down across the table with a cup of coffee with somebody and you could summarize to them why you feel it's devastating for the United States Senate to pass a health care bill that would mandate government funding of abortion and this bailout for the abortion industry, what would you tell that person?
I would tell them that this is a matter of life and death. We're not talking about something that's insignificant. We're talking about women going into these centers, and we're talking about women by the thousands every day. And we know that number would increase if this is passed. We're talking about women going into centers and taking the life of their child. There has to be a sense of urgency. We have to feel a sense of urgency. You know, now is not the time to become complacent. We have to be on the phone with our senators. We have to be on the phone with our legislators and let them know that, yes, we are pro-life, and, yes, we are willing to fight for this cause that we believe in. It's not enough to just say on paper or say to someone that we're pro-life. We actually have to put actions behind it.
Well, Abby, and I thank you for putting action behind your words, and I just want to congratulate you for having the courage to share your stories and your experiences and use them for the greater good, and hopefully your words can help somebody else tonight to understand the importance of what's at stake right now here in the United States of America. So thank you, and God bless.
Thank you.
All right, that was Abby Johnson, former Planned Parenthood director from Texas, and she told us that this is a matter of life and death, and she has seen that firsthand as she watched an abortion on an ultrasound inside her former workplace. And she told us that now is not the time to be complacent. So we've heard from each of the presenters gathered here around this table in Washington, D.C., the most important things that we can do. Let's pull it all together, and I'm going to task Kristen Hawkins from Students for Life to pull this all together and guide us through what each of us can do as a next step before we have concluding thoughts and wrap up for the night.
Thanks, David. So I have the fun part of wrapping up this night and telling you exactly what you need to do right now and what you need to write down to do tomorrow morning first thing. On the webcast page that you're listening to, you will see a blue link on the bottom right-hand side. It says, Contact Congress Now. If you can, click that link right now. That takes you to our Stop the Abortion Mandate Contact Congress webpage. On this page, we have helpful tips, do's and don'ts when contacting Congress, and there's three immediate action steps. One, email and fax your two senators. Two, call your representative and two senators at their Washington, D.C. offices and their local district offices. And three, ask everyone you know to repeat these same steps. So if you see this first link, email and fax your senators. If you join with me right now and click that link, we have a new system set up ready to go. The letter is already written. You simply need to put in your contact information, and an instant email will be sent to your two senators and your representative. You can also choose to print out this letter and send it in yourself for a more personal touch. Second, call offices tomorrow morning. On our website, we have, it says, call your representative and two senators. Those are hyperlinked. If you click the word representative and you click the words, two senators, it will take you to the Senate and the House switchboard websites where you can find the phone numbers for your representative and senators. It's very important that first thing tomorrow morning they hear from you and that you pass on this knowledge to them. And third, take this website, copy the link, and put it in an email and send it out to everyone you know tonight and tell them you are just on the Stop the Abortion Mandate webcast. They can go to stoptheabortionmandate.com tomorrow morning and listen to the webcast and tell them they need to be contacting their senators and representatives. Remember Charmaine, what Charmaine just said, the power of one. That's extremely important. And listen to what Abby said. Do not lose the sense of urgency. Do not become complacent. As we've been hearing more and more from you at our Stop the Abortion Mandate website, a lot of folks have said, well, Kristen, we've already done this. I already emailed my senators. That's not enough. You need to do it every day. You need to be on the first name basis with those people who answer the phones in Washington, D.C. or district offices. I know my mother is. They know when she's coming. In fact, when I call now, if they don't ask for my house address, I ask them to repeat it because sometimes they say, oh, yeah, we got your message. You're against health care. And I said, no, I want you to take my message down. I want you to take my address so you know I'm a constituent who votes. And you need to make that known tomorrow morning. Just remember, sense of one, don't lose your sense of urgency, power of one, and thank you to all those tonight who have been Facebook and tweeting all this. Charmaine and Tony have had some great tweeted quotes, so keep up your social networking skills as well and get all your friends your social networking sites linked to StopTheAbortionMandate.com.
And Kristen, thank you. And for those who are listening to this recording after the fact or for those who, for whatever reason, are not able to access through the link on the webcast page, you can go directly to the Contact Your Elected Officials page by visiting www.StopTheAbortionMandate.com. And if you then add /contact, so www.StopTheAbortionMandate.com/contact, that will take you right to the page where you can do those three action steps that Kristen just said. Well, in just a moment, we're going to wrap up with a closing prayer, but I wanted to give each of these expert presenters one last chance if they had any closing thoughts before we wrap up for the night and before we send off everybody with a word of closing prayer. Anybody want to start with a closing comment?
I'm going to close by quoting Wendy. When times are bleakest, we see God's work the clearest. All we have to do is be his hands right now.
Any other closing comments?
I would just underscore that it is the Christmas season. It's hard to find time for this sort of thing, but this is why they're doing it now. They are trying desperately to finish this when they think the public is distracted. The next 10 days are critical, and if you will take some action on this, every day during the days to come. It will have a multiplier effect, partly because of the fact that they are going to recognize what people, even in the holiday season, are paying attention to this. They feel so strongly that we're getting all these calls at a time of the year when people are usually tuned out to what's going on in Washington. And so it'll have even more impact, and that's what we need. We need them to draw back, to scrap this, to go back and start over. The only pro-life vote at this point is no.
Okay. Charmaine.
I just feel like it's a great honor to be a part of the pro-life movement today and to have an opportunity to be a part of this battle. This really is a historic battle. It's something that the abortion movement has been fighting toward literally for a century, and we have an opportunity to take a stand right now, draw a line in the sand. It is on a knife's edge as to which direction it's going to go, and I don't know that anybody could say right now, but we do have real hope and a real opportunity to make a difference, and I just am so grateful to all of you all who took the time to be with us tonight.
Hmm. Kristen.
Well, I just had a final comment. I was thinking about December 2nd, though, the big rally that the pro-abortion forces were gathering on Capitol Hill. They were going to take over Capitol Hill and show that they were for this new health care reform. They had less than 500 people out there. And if we think about the tens of thousands of people that we've been able to mobilize just since July against health care reform that includes any abortion language, we have won. We've been able to hold this bill as long as we possibly can. And I think people need to take heart that we've had a difference. We've made a huge difference in what's going on, and we just need to keep up our pressure and keep up that sense of urgency if we are going to be victorious.
Mm.
Well said.
Wendy?
I just want to thank you all for putting this together and helping to bring all the thousands of people who are on the line together as well. You know, so often we think I'm just one voice, I can't make a difference, but the way we make a difference is by joining together. So we're not just a drop, but a flood.
Mm. Well, our last person who will have a moment to share closing comments is also going to end us with prayer, and that is Tony Perkins. I also wanted to make you aware of tomorrow night, Family Research Council Action and the Call to Action are doing a video webcast that is focused on prayer. And I would just encourage any of the organizations that are represented here in this event tonight, if you go to the webcast page on the Stop the Abortion Mandate website, you can actually find the links to every one of these organizations' websites, and all of them have great resources and other information and other activities you can be involved in, and I would encourage you, avail yourself of these resources. But Tony Perkins from Family Research Council, I would like to ask you to share any closing comments, and then if you could end this evening in prayer.
Thanks, David, and again, thanks for inviting me to be a part of this, and Charmaine, again, thanks for hosting, and it's great to be with friends, especially in this city. let me just say this, and Wendy brought it up earlier, that is, we should never underestimate the power of prayer. Not only does it change the outcome of events, but it changes us in the process and helps us keep things in proper perspective. And we're doing, this work that we're doing is not for ourselves, but it's holding up a standard of truth and righteousness, and we need to be encouraged in that. So let's close in prayer. Father, we thank you for the opportunity to be together tonight. Amazing how technology can link us literally, not only across this country, but literally around the globe, and how we can join our minds and our hearts in activities together jointly. But Lord, also how we can be joined together in the Spirit in the bond of the love of Christ, as we realize, Lord, that this battle is not ours, but it is yours. And we stand for righteousness, we stand for truth, as you have enlightened us to have an understanding to do such. But Lord, we stand here for life, and we know that all life, all human life, is created in your image. And Father, it is deserving to be welcomed into this world, and that it is to be loved and cherished and protected under our laws. And I pray, Father, that in this battle that we will prevail and that our policies will reflect that sacredness of human life. But I pray, Father, that the march for life will not end in this health care debate, but it will continue on until this is a nation where every life is respected, every child, born and unborn, is welcomed into the American family and protected under the laws of this great country. Father, I pray that you would guide those brave and courageous senators who are standing for life with the right motives and intent. May you encourage them and strengthen them, and may you bless each and every one that's on this call tonight and give them the courage and the boldness to speak up, both to their elected officials and to their friends, that they would not be ashamed to stand on the side of life. Now be with us, Lord, in all that we do, that we might honor you. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Wendy Wright. Thank you, Charmaine Yost. Thank you, Tony Perkins. Thank you, Kristen Hawkins. Thank you, Marjorie Dannenfelser. Thank you, Douglas Johnson. And thank you, Abby Johnson, as well as Senator Mike Johanns. And thank you, everybody, for being a part of this webcast tonight. May God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America. Have a great night.
Thank you, David.